Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. A very important fight in that battle space will be taking place a bit later today as we speak. It'll have happened by the time this program airs. But we're speaking with one of the people who is most knowledgeable about what is at stake in the House Republican caucus that is scheduled for today by the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, at which he hopes to take stock with his colleagues in the Republican caucus and determine how to proceed with respect to the so-called Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill that was adopted by the Senate before the 4th of July recess. Our guest is Mark Krikorian. He is the founder and president of the Center for Immigration Studies, an enormously important organization. And the work that Mark and his colleagues have been doing to analyze what has come out of the Senate at every step of the process, but most especially now when the full gravity of this flawed legislation, really a monstrosity piece of legislation, is available for all of us to see. Mark, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you for the tremendous work you and your colleagues have been doing on this so-called reform bill. Tell us what you make of the prospects for the House Republicans in their caucus today.
Well, the question is not going to be whether they take the Senate bill up as such. There's no chance of that happening. The question, I think, really the central question is whether they're going to pass something that they intend to go into conference committee with the Senate. In other words, try to hammer out a compromise bill between the two chambers that they would then vote on and send to the president. And the opponents of this whole approach are saying that the goal has to be not to go to conference with the Senate, period, because there's no way that anything that emerges from such a meeting would be acceptable. But the danger is, and this is where the mistrust between the members, Republican House members, and their leadership comes in, the danger is that John Boehner will hammer out some kind of amnesty bill with the Senate. That won't be the same thing, but will still, in essence, be the same, in that everybody gets legalized first, and then everything else, you know, is promised later. And then we'll bring it to the House floor and pass it with the votes of the Democrats. And he only needs a couple dozen Republicans, if that, to be able to pass it, and he has it. And so the immigration hawks, the people concerned about enforcement and security and what have you, are going to demand that the House leadership not take any legislation into negotiations with the Senate, because that way lies betrayal.
This backstory of the lack of trust, as you say, Mark Krikorian, between the leadership in the House and the majority of its majority, it has been evidenced a number of times in the past. So they're not making this up. They have reason to be concerned whether their leadership will abandon what's been called the Hastert rule, as you know, that says the majority of the majority has to be really the governing group in terms of what is done by the House. To the extent that we know John Boehner's mind on this, is it clear whether he is intent on getting some sort of amnesty legislation through, or does he really see that, as the rest of his caucus, I think, or the majority of his caucus, that that way lies perdition, not just for the Republican Party, but for the Republic?
I think it's pretty clear that he would, in fact, like to pass an amnesty, both because he is, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, a corporate apparatchik in the mold of much of the Republican establishment.
I'd say that's a pretty fine point.
But also, Also, he, I think, has bought into this idea that the immigration issue is an irritant, it's causing problems for the Republicans, they need to put it behind them. That's the way they put it, which is, of course, absurd, because that's like saying put defense policy behind you or put tax policy behind you. It's a permanent feature of modern government. And yet there is this fairy tale that if only they can pass this, if only they can drag something like this, an amnesty, over the finish line, that they can then move on to things that, you know, really matter to them and their donors. And I think he's bought into that to some degree. The question is, will he bow to the sentiments of the majority of his caucus? He has been pressured over a period of weeks to actually make a commitment, and has in fact said he wouldn't bring anything to the floor that didn't have support of the majority of Republicans. But, you know, he's a politician, and so his, you know, I would take his word with a grain of salt. A lot of people just don't trust him.
Well, beyond that, there's been sort of this open question, I guess, and I think he tried to alleviate concerns about it, but there was what seemed to be a bit of a sleight of hand that he was not going to allow legislation like the Senate bill to be brought to the floor without the majority of the majority being in favor of it. But it was a little less clear whether that applied to a conference report as well. That is to say, the document that would come out of possibly this backroom smoke-filled deal-making operation that would presumably reflect more the Senate position on amnesty first, securing the border, and so on second. Has that been clarified to your satisfaction, Mark, and do you think to the satisfaction of his colleagues, or is that really where this mistrust comes in again?
I mean, the mistrust is there, but he has clarified it. The reason there was, I mean, the particular immediate reason there was mistrust is because one of National Review Online's reporters specifically asked him, well, you've said this about a bill, but what about a conference report? In other words, a negotiated agreement with the Senate. And he at the time said, well, we'll have to see, or something like that. And so immediately, I mean, that just put everybody's antenna up. And he was pressured, and subsequently he did say that he wouldn't even bring a conference report to the floor if it wasn't already supported by a majority of Republicans. So he has clarified that, but like I said, the fact that he had to be pressured into making that clarification itself is evidence that he really isn't where most Republicans in the House are.
Yeah. Mark, one of the rather extraordinary things that's happened along the trail is that in addition to your own very important analysis at the Center for Immigration Studies, we saw a sort of rapprochement between two of the intellectual leaders of the conservative ranks, Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard and
Rich Lowry
of the National Review, coming together behind a joint editorial to the effect of, well, kill the bill, I think is what they entitled it. Their analysis was very damning in terms of what's wrong with this bill. Do you think that this analysis of the border security provisions all being waivable by the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, for example, will resonate with this group in the House Republican caucus and stave off what could be disaster for them and for us?
Oh, I think it resonates very much so. And, you know, the interesting point about that joint article that was published both in the National Review and the Weekly Standard at the same time, written by their editors jointly, was that Kristol actually is something of an expansionist in immigration. He's kind of pro-amnesty, you know, high immigration guy, very different from National Review. But even he has concluded that this legislation is an absurdity and that, you know, it's a 1,200-page pork barrel legislation. It gives amnesty first, thereby eliminating any political incentive to support support enforcement and security measures in the future, and frankly is this massive increase in less skilled immigration at a time when, you know, American workers are having a hard time finding any kind of work and are dropping out of the labor market altogether. So it really was remarkable that both big conservative magazines with very different positions on immigration have come together to agree that there should be no compromise bill, no conference committee meeting with the Senate, no nothing. It has to be killed and then start from scratch.
Yeah, under circumstances where they think there may be better you know, votes in the Senate as well as in the House in the future. I must say I completely agree with them and hope that that you're right, that this article and again, the work that you've done at the Center for Immigration Studies will prevail in the course of the proceedings today of the House Republicans. We'll be following it closely, as I know will you, and I look forward to visiting with you again about it in the very near future. Thank you so much for joining us, as always, Mark Krikorian of the Center for Immigration Studies. Next up, Roger Noriega joins us. We'll be talking about the Snowden affair in our backyard, Latin America, and refuge for this scoundrel. Straight ahead.
Thing. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change your minds.
They're not going to change your minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. For over 7 months, the truth has been hidden about a terrorist attack that killed 4 Americans in Benghazi, Libya, last September 11th. We still don't know why our ambassador was in that dangerous place on a day Islamists have made dangerous for all of us, or why we were repeatedly told that a mob, not jihadist, killed him and his comrades, or why no effective rescue effort was mounted. So 700 of my fellow Special Forces veterans who have participated in such efforts in the past have teamed up to learn the truth and to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. To see a copy of our open letter to House Speaker John Boehner calling for a real investigation of Benghazi Gate and to urge your representative to do the same, go to www.inthecoverup.com, a project of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Roger Noriega. He is our duty expert on Latin America here at Secure Freedom Radio, a man who is now with the American Enterprise Institute, but has established over many years a reputation for his expertise on matters involving our hemisphere, notably as the Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs and the U.S. Ambassador to the Organization of American States. Roger, welcome back. We are, of course, beset with a number of different topics that we're anxious to talk with you about, so let's jump right into it. I'm anxious particularly to hear your thoughts on what is going on with respect to the Edward Snowden affair as it relates to the hemisphere. Talk a little bit about the Bolivian president's plane in Europe and how that has been received when it was diverted, and more generally what's been offered by way of asylum by several states in our region.
Well, I think it's remarkable that right here in our neighborhood are the series of countries that Snowden actually considers a hospitable place, and that tells you just the degradation, really, of freedom of expression in Latin America and these leftist states. The Morales, president of Bolivia, was supposedly carrying Snowden. They thought to be on his plane, and so a couple of European states refused to let him overfly their territory. Frankly, they were a little bit concerned that he might end up in their countries, I suppose. But this has become a bit of a scandal. But I think the real scandal is that the place where an anti-American person like Snowden, the figure of Snowden, would find hosts right here in our hemisphere. It shows you the level that our stature in the region has sunken to, and this is under the Obama administration, who was supposed to cure all of these ills, make us the most popular nation in the world, and heal the oceans and all of that. And quite frankly, the fact that we have enemies so close to our shore should be disturbing to the American people.
Indeed it should. We're joined once again by Roger Noriega. He is the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, now a visiting fellow with the American Enterprise Institute, and of course, a driving force behind a terrific resource, InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com. Roger, you were talking a bit about sort of hostiles in our hemisphere and the evidence that the Obama administration has not turned that situation around. If anything, I gather it's really worse as a result of the 4 years of, four and a half now years of the Obama presidency. Let's talk a little bit about one of the most worrying facets of this, namely Iran's penetration of our hemisphere. There's a piece in the Washington Free Beacon today about sort of the latest on what's happening with Argentina, but it's not confined to that. Tell us a little bit about what the Iranians are up to and how serious a threat you think it represents.
Well, you know, the significance of the Snowden affair, for example, Frank, is that what little stature the United States has and the little concern that these tiny, relatively small nations have about what President Obama thinks about anything. And so what would a hostile nation like Iran think about his idle threats, his empty rhetoric? And they're continuing to push in, as they have really the last 8 years, in a very aggressive way, using Venezuela as a platform, reaching a series of agreements throughout South America, and as recently as a new aggressive push in Argentina, of all places, where Iranians are implicated in the 1992 and 94 bombings in the heart of Buenos Aires. So they're on the march, and the remarkable thing is that the State Department, as demanded by Congress, recently did a report on Iran's presence in the region and really whitewashed the whole thing, said it's waning. This goes contrary to what U.S. Generals have said, that the Iranian presence is growing, it's a matter of concern, and that we don't have enough intelligence about what's going on. And I think that this could end up being resulting in an attack in our hemisphere, and whoever wrote that report, I hope, pays for their career for the lack of vigilance and the lack of rigor in paying attention and more importantly responding to what Iran is doing right here, making common cause with our enemies and criminal elements that reach right into our territory.
Yeah. I know Congressman Jeff Duncan was the instigator of the requirement for that report, and he's taken strong exception, as you have, Roger Noriega, to the findings of it. And there really does seem to be a dreadful quality control problem in the administration in the moment on these matters. As I recall, we talked before about this. The administration also found that there was no evidence of organized networks of terrorists operating in our hemisphere. And I know you've testified to the contrary on that score, including, of course, Hezbollah, the Iranian proxy in the region. Let me turn to another topic that I know you've also been concerned about, Roger, and I think we all should be, namely the penetration of our hemisphere by communist China. We'll be talking shortly with Larry Wurzel about what China's up to as it expands its global reach. But visit with us a little bit about what's happening in that regard, through economic means as well as through its presence in our hemisphere, by talking a little bit about what Venezuela has done, cracking down on corruption by going after people who seem to be embezzling from the Chinese. Doesn't seem to me to be necessarily the most effective way to correct what is a rampant problem in their country, but it does seem to be in the service of an increasingly important patron.
Well, Venezuela is a particularly significant case because the Chinese hold sway there because of the roughly $40 billion in loans that they've given to Venezuela in the last couple of years. And so, and they sort of are in a position to micromanage the Venezuelan economy for, I guess it's showing, because of the economic weight that they have in that disintegrating economy. The Chinese presence has gone from sort of extractive industries taking away ores and soybeans and that sort of thing, and they've started to sink a deeper footprint in terms of an industrial presence as they buy into local companies and expand them. So now you have this new phenomenon where they have an industrial presence, and they do, by the way, tons of environmental damage. They have no regard for labor rights and all those sorts of things. So you talk about savage capitalism. This is savage capitalism. It comes from the communist Chinese, and also it's run sort of as a corporation where the ambassador is the CEO in these countries and can call the shots about what the different economic actors do in a particular economy. So they have the Chinese influence is very powerful. And it's growing every day. We need to respond with free trade, with American companies investing, showing how much better economic and fairer economic partners our corporations are. And unfortunately, the president has spent 5 years basically asleep at the switch and has only recently awakened to the fact that the Chinese have stolen the march on us. And we need this for our own economic development, this kind of commercial relationship in our natural market.
Plus, also at protecting our hemisphere from the kinds of threats that the Chinese clearly could constitute. We've seen in Nicaragua, as we've talked about before, Roger, the Chinese getting into position to put a canal in, a very strategic play, and obviously an enormous presence that would be associated with it. We're also hearing reports about billions of dollars being given or loaned to Ecuador, another of the countries that in the wake of Hugo Chavez's demise has tried to assert itself as a leader of the Chavismo threat. So much to cover, much to focus on, much to worry about, I guess, frankly. And nobody is more effective in helping us do that than you. We appreciate very much your time. Roger Noriega, now with the American Enterprise Institute. Keep up the good work, my friend, and come back to us again very soon. As mentioned, we'll be talking more about this Chinese global reach with Larry Wurzel right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. House Republicans hold a pivotal meeting today. It should decide the fate of Senate-approved legislation that would provide amnesty for millions of people who have violated our laws. It will probably also determine the fate of their party and our republic. There are numerous reasons for rejecting this monstrosity. Since our borders will remain unsecured, it will prove a magnet for more illegal aliens and more amnesties in the future. It will permit terrorists now here to be put on the so-called path to citizenship. And author Trevor Loudon has established that this bill is the product of decades of work by communists determined to consign the GOP to permanent minority status, incapable of halting the further radical transformation of America. This bill must be killed, and House Republicans must do it today. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday morning from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Larry Wurtzel, a man who has distinguished himself over a long period of time in Washington and elsewhere in the country as one of our preeminent experts on China, and in particular, the Chinese military and what it is up to. He served for 32 years in the United States military, in the Army and Marine Corps, including two tours as the military attaché in our embassy in Beijing. He's held a number of different positions of note, including at the Heritage Foundation and at the Army War College. He is currently a commissioner on the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, a marvelous organization that he chaired for a number of years. And he is the author most recently of a brand new book, The Dragon Extends Its Reach, Chinese Military Power Goes Global. Larry Wurtzel, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us. Congratulations on the new book.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. It's a pleasure to be on the air with you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you. Listen, I'm very anxious to explore with you what is the Dragon up to at the moment as it extends its reach and goes global. Talk a bit about the kinds of qualitative, as well as in some cases quantitative, improvements that the Chinese military has been making in the various areas of concern.
I think the most important modernization has been in the space and surveillance and command and control architecture, C4ISR. And I really made that sort of the lead chapter in the book before I begin to discuss the Navy, the Air Force, their Marine Corps, their ground forces of their Army, and their missile forces, because it is the ability to, in real time, look around the world, communicate around the world, and the architecture that supports that, that allows this military to change from what was essentially a continental force just looking out along its borders and in the near seas into a force that can do what Hu Jintao told it to do, protect China's national interests around the world.
Yeah, project power. And Larry, it's not just sort of situational awareness that the Chinese seem to be interested in terms of space. It seems they understand that it really is, as has been called in the past, the high frontier, and that by exercising control over space, they can negate the power projection capabilities, or at least greatly degrade them, of countries like ours.
Well, they see the control of space and what they call space deterrence as very important when they're facing what they see as their most likely potential adversary, the United States. First of all, they know we're dependent on it, more dependent than them. They're becoming dependent as they put up this architecture. But they have managed to gather together from Russia, from our European allies, the electronic data links and the surveillance systems that will put together a complex of space surveillance, airborne surveillance, and seaborne and land surveillance. So they have a pretty comprehensive picture about what's going on for thousands of miles out into the ocean and around the world. And it's dependent really on what they lacked up to about 4 years ago, tracking and data relay satellites. They now have about as many up as we do, and that's what makes it real time.
Yeah, and you mentioned a couple of other actors who have been contributing to China's capabilities in this space, but I know you're also very concerned about their cyber warfare and cyber espionage activities, Larry Wurzel, and that has meant, as I understand it, they have been gaining access to technologies that are relevant not just to space surveillance and control, but also to a whole host of other applications for their military from us as well.
Well, that's right. One of the things that I try to do in the book is point out that they do have weaknesses, and serious weaknesses. It's not quite a one-time use military, but it's almost that, in that they don't have the strategic depth to produce really critical things on their own. Naval propulsion systems, really good, durable, high-endurance jet aircraft engines. And those are the targets of their cyber espionage, and those are the targets of human espionage. And the FBI has done, I think, and the Justice Department, a great job in prosecuting some of the espionage cases. I think the...
But isn't that kind of the barn door after the horse is gone problem?
Well, it is. It looks like if the Northrop Grumman report for the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission and the Mandiant report are correct, they got a lot of the plans for and the electronic systems data for the F-35 strike fighter.
It seems as though an awful lot of what they're fielding at the moment seems to be knockoffs of our very much frontline stuff. Larry Wurzel is our guest. He is a member of the commission he just referred to, the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission. Formerly chaired it. He is also the author most recently of a terrific new book, The Dragon Extends Its Reach, Chinese Military Power Goes Global. Larry, we're going to have to have you back for a much deeper drill down on this, if you'll indulge us. But just in the short time we have now, briefly, turn to China's nuclear capabilities. What are they doing in that space, and how serious a threat do you think it constitutes?
I think that's the most serious deterrent they have, and the most existential threat to the United States. We really don't know how many nuclear warheads they have. The Russians put it at about 800 to 1600, some of those reserves. International Institute of Strategic Studies, and the Taiwanese put it at somewhere around 200 to 400. And I cannot imagine why the United States intelligence community refuses to back off its estimate of somewhere around 200. But they're all road mobile now.
And many of them are, as I understand it, Larry, at least some portion of this road mobile force seems to be deployed within this so-called underground Great Wall complex of 3,000 miles or so of hardened tunnels. This seems designed to defy or at least try to defeat our efforts to understand what their capabilities actually might be in this space.
Well, it defeats our efforts to understand what the capabilities are, but it also defeats our efforts to detect when they might be preparing for a launch.
Indeed. Indeed. Very frightening stuff. Larry, we are almost out of time, I'm sorry to say, but we do want to talk about this much more with you in the future. Let's visit just quickly on a thesis that our friend Gordon Chang has propounded, and I'd like to get your quick take on it, namely that economic difficulties and political turmoil still at the senior levels of the Communist Party, at a moment when this kind of military buildup is taking place, could augur for war if the Chinese decide that they must use sort of social engineering to maintain domestic control. What are your thoughts on that subject? Should we be concerned that this is lurching now into a direction that could be quite dangerous indeed?
I think Gordon's not the only one that has that thesis. I personally think that historically, when the state was weak in China, it actually tended to turn in against itself in internal unrest and fighting. I almost welcome a weak state. I mean, it would be very difficult for a whole lot of Chinese, but I don't necessarily think that in itself would lead to a conflict. I think it's more likely, if one came about, it's going to be questions over sovereignty and the right to transit the waters they claim in violation of international law and practice.
Which seems to be pretty much of the South China Sea at the moment.
And the East China Sea.
And the East China Sea as well. Larry Wurzel, please come back to us again very soon. Again, congratulations on your terrific new book, The Dragon Extends Its Reach, Chinese Military Power Goes Global. Keep up the good work, and we'll visit with you again very soon. Next up, Dory Gold joins us with the latest on Egypt and the gathering storm in the Middle East and why Israel must have secure borders. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaevs' kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Ambassador Dory Gold. He is one of his country's most eminent diplomats. He hails from Israel, where he represented his country at the United Nations, notably, and he is the author of numerous very important books, including Hatred's Kingdom, The Rise of Nuclear Iran, and The Fight for Jerusalem. Dory Gold, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
It's a real pleasure to be with you and with your audience.
Thank you. I know you are, at the moment, in a somewhat inconvenient location, so I'm going to be very brief and to the point. Talk to us, if you would, as you see it, what is happening in your neighborhood, specifically at the moment in Egypt, with the Muslim Brotherhood being removed from power, the struggle with the military, and so on. What does it mean both for the folks in Egypt and for Israel and the region more generally?
Well, let me start by saying I think Israel's problems in the region are increasingly the same problems the whole international community faces, but particularly the United States and its allies. Look, the Muslim Brotherhood was bad news from day one. Anyone who's familiar with the writings of Hassan al-Banna, the man who founded the Muslim Brotherhood back in 1928, understands that this is an organization that essentially calls for a global caliphate. In fact, it came into existence when the last caliphate, the Ottoman Empire, fell apart and was no longer in existence, and they wanted to replace it. The writings of El-Banna, which are now, you can find them on the internet in English and Arabic, call for recovering lost Islamic territories in Sicily, southern Italy, Spain, which they call Andalus, and elsewhere. The war that they want to wage isn't just against Israel, it's against the West. With respect to Israel, obviously they have been, since 1948, when Israel was born, a leading force in calling for a jihad, an armed conflict with us. So having the Muslim Brotherhood come to power last year was bad news for anyone who wants to see international law respected in the Middle East and borders protected. Now that they have fallen from power, possibility of a better situation arising is there. And let's just hope that a new democratic regime emerges in Egypt, and democracy and responsible government emerges elsewhere in the Middle East.
Well, amen to that. Dory Gould, quickly, does the problem that you've described, particularly with borders, like the Sinai and, for that matter, Gaza, as they relate to a turmoil in Egypt, give rise to a new and potentially quite dangerous threat from that quarter to the state of Israel?
Well, what has happened is this. You know, Israel withdrew from the Sinai Peninsula back in 1982. It signed the peace treaty in 1979. And the Egyptians pretty much observed their side of the treaty. They very carefully kept the amount of forces they had in Sinai limited. And we were able to live with that. What I think has happened since then is when Hamas, which is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, came to power in the Gaza Strip, first in 2006, and then when it threw out the Fatah government in 2007, the amount of terrorism coming out of Gaza increased dramatically. Israel is no longer blocking the entry into Gaza from the Sinai Peninsula, and therefore the amount of weaponry from Iran, from Sudan, that was pushed into Gaza increased in large numbers. The quality of the weapons being used, shoulder-fired missiles that could take down aircraft, were suddenly arriving in the Gaza Strip. You know, when you had the war in Libya, we now have Libyan weapons joining the Iranian weapons that have made it to Gaza, which have increased tremendously the fighting potential of various terrorist groups, not just Hamas, that are situated there.
Dory, yes. To the extent that you have, in addition to all of this happening, turmoil across the Golan Heights in Syria, this seems clearly to elevate to a new level the arguments that you have been making for quite some time about the imperative of Israel maintaining secure borders, or defensible borders, more to the point. What is the current state of play with respect to your own government's thinking on this subject, and the efforts that we've seen John Kerry, the Secretary of State, making now relentlessly to fashion some kind of arrangement that will get negotiations on this subject going again?
Well, you might remember going back to the 57 Six-Day War, which Israel won, and that's how it came in control of some of these territories. It was a war of self-defense. The United Nations never required Israel to pull out of all those territories. The boundaries were old armistice lines that had to be replaced with new international borders that were going to be negotiated. American presidents, one after the other, agreed with the idea that Israel should get new defensible borders. It was that phrase was used by Ronald Reagan in 1982 when he issued the Reagan Plan, but was also, for example, issued in a letter in 2004 by President Bush, which was issued when Israel said it was going to unilaterally get out of Gaza. The idea is that Israel doesn't go back to those vulnerable lines from which it was attacked, but it's a new boundary. Unfortunately, there are many in Washington, London, Paris, and other capitals who believe Israel should withdraw to those old 1967 lines, even though they weren't a real international border. And that's the pressure that Israel currently faces. Now, you might say, or others might say, that, well, wait a minute, where are these big tank formations that existed once in the Middle East? They're all falling apart. You don't have that kind of a threat any longer. Well, what we do have are new, more robust terrorist forces that exist in the Middle East that are using, as I said before, shoulder-fired missiles, that are getting state-of-the-art Russian weaponry that may someday have non-conventional weaponry. And in order to prevent that weaponry from being smuggled into the suburbs of Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, we have to control an area called the Jordan Valley, which all the architects of Israel's national security said was vital for the future of Israel.
Yeah,
And we're hoping that we'll have support from the United States for that position.
What are you seeing, though, Dory Gold? You're a close observer of these matters, and you advise, of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu's government and are, you know, very much involved in the debate internal to Israel. What are you seeing in the way of pressure coming from John Kerry to do something other than maintain these defensible borders as part of the, you know, commitment, the sacrifice that Israel must make in order to get these negotiations with the Palestinians underway again?
Well, I'm not going to go into the content of U.S.-Israeli talks that have been occurring until recently. I just think that's improper. You know, the problem many times is not what a Secretary of State says to a Prime Minister or vice versa. The problem is really a war of ideas. There are ideas out there, you know, the think tanks in the Capitol Beltway or in London that say, you know, Israel should pull back to those vulnerable 67 lines and maybe accept international forces. What we've discovered is international forces are a disaster. We see the UN forces that have been stationed on the Golan Heights falling apart the moment there's jihadi threats against them. In southern Lebanon, we were told in 2007 that we would have a reinforced UNIFIL with European armies now stationed in southern Lebanon. They're not going to go into Shiite villages and ferret out the Iranian rockets that Hezbollah has put in people's homes.
That's for sure.
Use one day against Israel. They're not going to take that risk.
Yeah.
So we don't rely on international forces. Our doctrine is very simple. Israel must defend itself by itself. And we're hoping that that position is widely supported.
We certainly support it here at Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you, Dr. Gold, very much for being with us, for the terrific work you do at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. Please keep it up, and please come back to us again very soon. We hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.